Kia ora and welcome to the C Word Radio, the podcast for cancery people who want real conversations about cancer. I'm your host, Helen King. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find good podcasts. Welcome back to another episode. I have just come back from walking my two dogs, or the knuckleheads, as we like to call them. I actually sat down to record this a little earlier, but they were being very naughty, which is generally their way of saying, come on, take us for a walk. So I've been out, taking them for a good blast, so I can at least get a little bit of peace and quiet. And I also stopped off and got a lovely proper coffee from a local cafe, so I am happy. It has been such a busy week here as I kicked off the This Is Breast Cancer social media campaign. If you haven't seen the first week of posts, head over to my Instagram or Facebook page and catch up on some of the amazing stories and insights from the participants so far. There are 31 people from across the globe that are involved in this campaign, and I am so blown away by people's generosity and openness to sharing their experiences. I was also interviewed on RNZ's First Up this week about the campaign, and I'm going to leave all of those details in the show notes for you to catch up on it. I'm so chuffed, I really am, and I am so pleased that I can create this platform to show, to show people a different side of breast cancer, because, you know, I decided that this year I wanted to do something different for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I wanted to create something more authentic that really shows that breast cancer exists beyond October and put some faces to it. The other thing that I've done this week is that I have created a tiered membership for the C Word Radio on Ko-fi. That is a platform where you can choose to support the show and help keep me making the podcast. There are three options. They're all monthly, $5, $10 and $20. My goal is to really create a community where we can talk about episodes, share our experiences and support each other as we either are going through treatment or healing beyond treatment. Part of the membership levels is an access to a private group, and this week I was looking at starting something on Facebook, but after Facebook going offline for a day, I've actually been wondering if there's a different platform to do this on. So if anyone has any ideas, please let me know. But I'm just having a think about that because I don't know, maybe one day we'll all need to move beyond Facebook and it would be great to have somewhere where we can connect as a community. I am so excited about this week's guest. I came across her profile on Instagram, and she is just one of those people who shines. Naya Kite shares her journey of healing after breast cancer, and she is such a joy to follow. Honestly, Naya is just such a beautiful person, and her experience has not been straightforward. Like many of us who have had cancer, whether it's breast or any of the other types, it's been a wake-up call where she has needed to radically change the way that she does things. She was actually diagnosed with breast cancer in the early stages of her second pregnancy, in the middle of a pandemic. We started our conversation with her explaining her extraordinary circumstances around her daughter's birth. This is Naya's story.
It all feels like a dream, to be honest with you. I woke up really early that morning, maybe 3, 4 a.m. And something was like, you're going to have this baby today. And I knew it was going to be the last time that my son was an only child. So I was like, this day has to be super special. Too much. So I created like this whole sports day. I mean, DIY projects the whole time I'm awake until he wakes up. And I feel myself as I'm working on these projects starting to go into labor. But it was very like minor, little bit of pain. And the contractions were super spaced out, like an hour. There was time. He wakes up and I create fourth day, so we go play. We're doing all these games and activities, and this went on for maybe 3 hours, and I was like, let me feed him lunch. And then something was like, get him out of the house. You're going to have this baby soon. And so the contractions started coming maybe about 30 minutes apart, but still not enough time to go to the hospital yet. So I told him, hurry up and eat. I loaded him and the dog in the car, drove 15 minutes to my parents' house, said, bye-bye. Got in the car to go back home. And the contractions started coming closer together, maybe like 15 minutes apart. So I had a doula who could not go to the hospital with me anyway. So she was like, as soon as you feel them, call me. And I was like, do I go to the hospital or do I go home? And she was like, go home. As soon as I walk in my door, I'm like, I got so sick. So I walked up the stairs to the bathroom, did what I needed to do there. And then I got hot. And I was like, I just need a shower. So I was just like letting the water pour on me, drenched in the shower. And I called my then fiance and was like, the baby's coming. And he wasn't close enough yet, but he called our neighbor and she had a key to come in the house. And at the same time she's entering the house, I'm on the phone with the doula and she's like, okay, your neighbor needs to take you to the hospital. And I'm like, we don't have time for that. The baby's coming now. And literally the neighbor walked in the stairs and was like, here you go. And my daughter was out.
Whoa.
Less than 5 minutes.
Wow. That is crazy.
I say the craziest thing I've ever experienced.
Yeah. And I love that you tried to pick in a whole day with your son.
I think it was, but you know, like looking back, I think it was to keep my mind occupied, to not focus in on the contractions. Because going through cancer, then the pandemic, like I think I was just so nervous about being pregnant during all of that and really not knowing what to expect at the hospital. And so I was going to stay busy for myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to imagine what hospitals alike at the moment, so I imagine you had that sort of instinct must have just kicked in and gone, no, I need to keep myself safe.
Exactly. But you know, I still had to go to the hospital because my placenta wouldn't come out. And let me tell you, I was quarantined for 3 hours in the hospital while I had to have a test. It was awful.
Wow.
And they wouldn't let us leave for food or anything.
Yeah. Oh gosh. But yeah, we were saying before we hit record, it's such a strange time at the moment. And when you said before, you know, we'd had COVID and cancer and a pregnancy, I think one of those things in your lifetime is huge. But you went through all three in such a close space of time. So let's go back. You're 12 weeks pregnant and you find out you have cancer. How did that happen? Did you find a lump? What went on?
Sure. I found a lump while actually nursing my oldest child. But to be honest, I put off going to the doctor probably 3, 4, 5 months. And when I went, I initially went in about the pregnancy. No, I initially went in for a physical for the job, for my job. And a month later, I went back and told her I thought I was pregnant. And she was like, did you ever have that lump checked out? And I was like, no, I couldn't get in the hospital yet. And she said, oh, no, you're pregnant. So this is going to expedite the growth of the, if it is cancerous. And she was like, you need to get in immediately. And she recommended a new hospital for me to go to at that time. And I would say something so wonderful, like a pregnancy, that happiness was immediately snatched from me.
Wow.
Once I had cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. I spoke to a woman recently for another of the episodes, and she was diagnosed a few weeks after the birth of her first child. And she says this very same thing where, you know, she's in this newborn, new mum bliss. And then that is taken away because all of a sudden she's in that cancer realm. And I think about how quickly that happens and how intense that is, and I can't even imagine having to carry both at the same time. This amazing thing of pregnancy, and oh, and by the way, you also have cancer.
Yes, I think about that a lot still, because people often looked at me with such pity, or I was treated like a science experiment because the doctors had never encountered this before. And it's just the fact that you're trying to learn how to manage it yourself is new to you, and everybody else around you doesn't understand either. So they have 1,000 questions and you're trying to process it yourself, and you really can't. It's hard to explain it. It's just like what I have to go through. I have to fight for two of us.
Yes. And so what happens when you are pregnant with cancer treatment? Do they have to delay anything? Can you have a surgery? What happened from your diagnosis?
So everything is delayed. You basically cannot begin treatment until the middle to the end of the second trimester. So 12 weeks, I was approaching the end of the first, so I didn't have to wait as long. And then they switched the order of treatment. I had my mastectomy first to give more time to pass before beginning chemo, because although it's safe, you have to wait until the baby's a little older in the womb. So whereas you hear people saying, I scheduled my surgery like a week after, or I began treatment a week after my diagnosis, I waited a month to even start. So the whole time I'm thinking, it's getting bigger, it's getting bigger, it's getting bigger, and there's literally nothing I can do about it but wait.
Wow. How do you cope with that? How do you get about the process of being a mum still to a small child, being pregnant and wondering about how am I going to deal with cancer?
I have to say, this is the part of the pandemic that I am grateful for. I think having to be on lockdown with my child made the time fly by. Like, he's super active, so it's like, we got to do all of this stuff. So there wasn't a lot of time to sit and mope. Those moments at night when I was by myself, I would just throw in a meditation. I found this meditation app called Insight Timer, and they have meditation specifically geared for cancer. My favorite one, over and over, I would start repeating this. It was like, I love you, cancer. I forgive you, cancer. I love you, Naya. I forgive you, Naya. Until I was literally believing that. And just really turning on some music and crying and just being okay with crying and saying, this is what it is. I don't know what I'm doing. And nobody can really guide me, because a lot of people haven't experienced a pregnancy and cancer at the same time.
No, not at all. I've met a lot of women and people who've had cancer in the past 3 years, but I haven't really met anyone who found it that early into the pregnancy. When did you start being able to have chemo? When did that part of the treatment start?
I began chemo in February 2020, and they had to treat it a little differently. Chemo had to be spaced out 3 weeks apart instead of typically two. I was disappointed, honestly, because they told me I would be able to complete all 8 rounds at the beginning. And then they were like, no, it's going to be too much for the baby. So that changed it to just completing the 4. I'm really happy, actually, they did that way, because the first 4 rounds, I was able to have my daughter in the womb when nobody was able to attend with me due to the pandemic. And then afterwards, I was able to just attend by myself and have peace. So it was nice, like, to have that broken up.
Yeah. Wow. Gosh, it's really hard to comprehend that was your cancer experience. And so I guess I'm going to put your Instagram in the show notes, because I feel like when you come across your Instagram, it's this beautiful, vibrant message. And I was so curious about how you started that healing process, because you've had these experiences that have been huge on your body. Pregnancy is a huge toll on a person's body, because it just is. You're growing another human being. And cancer treatment is a very intense thing. So when you finished up your cancer treatment and you're a mum to a little baby and a very rambunctious little boy, how do you start your healing journey from there? Where did it start for you?
You know, it started before treatment ended. I have to say, I was very blessed that from the time I was diagnosed, the one of the first people I told was my brother. And he lives in California. And he said to me, the weekend before surgery, I'm flying you out here. And I'm going to just plan it. And when I went, he had all this alone time planned out. But then he also had a yoga session and meditative tea, like all of these healing things. And when I was there, I'm like, this is where what I need to be focused on through the process, like this level of peace. So when I came back the day before surgery and I'm preparing, I just felt so peaceful. And when I went to surgery and they gave me the anesthesia, the last thing I saw was these magnificent clouds. And I said, I want to hold on to this peace. So from that moment, after waking up from surgery, I started doing like really enhancing myself in the meditations, reading, journaling every day. I find that sharing my experience on Instagram really helped because then people were like, oh, I experienced that. And I was like, oh, I'm not alone. And it actually led me to so many groups geared towards women who are pregnant with different types of cancer. And like that support system and community that was built was just so helpful. And then in terms of like actually healing, I feel like I had to turn within. I like when people ask me how I got through all this, the only thing I can say is cancer saved my life. It was a wake up call for me. And most people don't look at cancer like that. But for me, I was in a level of just victimhood and a lot of chaos in my life and feeling very stagnant. And it was thing that kind of forced me to move and shut everything out, close my eyes and see what was really happening around me and start to remove pieces, people, things that no longer were uplifting me. And once I did that, by the end of treatment, that I finished treatment December 2020. The time was still focused on healing, but it was now more the fun part of healing, like the self-care, figuring out what I enjoyed, that kind of thing.
Now, let me tell you about Sweet Noise, the only charity dedicated to supporting Kiwis with incurable breast cancer. They provide practical help like meal deliveries, one-to-one emotional and group support for over 760 women around the country. Right now, they really need your help. With no government funding, COVID has made things challenging for this little charity with a big heart. To make your donation, please visit sweetlouise.co.nz. Thanks so much. That's a huge shift, isn't it? That's a huge transformation to go through. Because I think for me, it was a huge wake-up call as well, because I had been through these years of intense pain of different things happening. My marriage ended. I went back into an industry that I'd worked in before, but it was terrible for me because I'm someone that really seeks out that drive and that kind of, yeah, the chaos and the achieving and all that stuff. And cancer grounded me. Utterly grounded me. I had to stop. I couldn't. I had such heavy chemo that I was in bed for 6 months.
I feel you on that. Like, I always say that God knew what I needed, because if I hadn't been pregnant, I would have never gone through chemo and radiation. Everybody, like my mom and grandma, had cancer before me, and so this is something like we discussed. I was like, I would never do those things. These are the things I needed to stop. Think about like going through chemo while pregnant. A lot of the intense side effects from chemo, I didn't necessarily experience, but I was so sick from being pregnant and so sick from chemo treatments. Like the only thing I could do was lay down on the couch. And then when you're laying there, you're watching your life flash by. You're trying to figure out like where you went wrong to get in this situation. No choice but to address it. Within and do that shadow work, like you're literally forced into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I think my process has been a lot slower, because I think for me my experience has been like I'm just peeling things back all the time. And even with COVID, it was another moment to stop and reassess. And it feels like, and I think I'm probably back there at the moment because I've been really intrigued at exploring this idea of what does healing mean? How have other people done it? Because I think I have this sense that there's more work to be done to maybe let go of some of that past stuff and let go of the things that don't serve me and don't work. And yeah, so it's that having to be grounded. And I remember the first thought I started to have was, why is there always this sense of having to achieve or having to be productive or have, you know, often found it really hard just to be okay with resting, to be okay with actually not doing anything in the day. And so it really made me start to explore that idea of why do I feel the need to constantly be doing something?
Yeah, I can relate. Still struggling with that. I have to admit, like, healing's not linear. There's a lot of ups and downs, and I feel like the more I grow, the more I realize there's still deep-rooted issues. So this last week, I was having these moments of, like, because about a year out of finishing chemo, and, like, my body automatically went back into, like, that survivor mode. Like, you just finished chemo, and you don't feel good. I had to sit with myself and like, why do I feel so bad? And just yesterday I was like so happy. And I realized this because literally a year out of finishing and I felt so awful last year. And I told myself, I'm just going to shut everything down, escape through TV, myself speak, and get together. So it's not linear. It's an evolving process. And I feel like when we try to ignore those feelings, it starts to become bigger and bigger until pay attention to me. So it was small for me last week. And I was like, I have to focus on this and rest because that's the part I don't like to do. Not to sit with those thoughts. It's uncomfortable to sit with painful thoughts. It's uncomfortable to think about past traumas that you don't want to address. It's uncomfortable to do like the inner child work, right?
Oh gosh, yes, it is so true. And it is so uncomfortable. It really is. And I was very similar where that year after treatment ended, I was still having Herceptin infusion. So in a way, I was still very much attached to the hospital system, but I was in so much sort of grief, I think. You know, I came out the other end. My body was so broken down by the treatment and it would not do what it used to do. And it took me a really long time to get my energy levels back up, to be able to do things. And my body is very different now. And there was so much to sort of reconcile, but I didn't know how to do it. And it felt like there was nowhere to go to learn. I mean, we're really lucky here in New Zealand that we have a public medical system and that we can get physical treatment, but it can be really hard to figure out where do I go to learn to heal because I was not taught how to do this.
Exactly. I feel like I still say my body is not doing anything that it used to be able to do. I am a tap dance teacher and I explain to people like when I tap, my body is in pain now and I never experienced that before. And it's disheartening to teach a 45-minute class and be like, oh, my knees ache and walk out of class like I've been tapping all day long. So I just really had to learn to accept that my body's not going to do what it used to do. And that's okay. So now I need to have this clean slate of having no expectations for it. If I had 17 lymph nodes removed from my right side, and so I'm lucky if my arm goes this high. And so I celebrate that when it happens. But right now, higher than that, that's not what I'm expecting. I'm expecting it not to lift that high. So if it does, I'm like, woo, let's celebrate that. So you celebrate those small wins and find the magic in those moments. If I can make it through a tap class without a knee ache or suffering from chemo brain where my students are looking at me, that's not what you just taught us. And I'm like, yes, it is. And they're like, no, it's not.
We're going with it.
Exactly. Exactly. Small wins. That's what we have to focus on celebrating.
Oh, absolutely. So I want to pick up on something you said before about your mum and your grandmother had also been through breast cancer. Did they have treatment? Did they go through chemo or radiation?
Yes, they did. And my grandma had a lumpectomy and my mom had a mastectomy. And both still surviving. My grandma is 92.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Because I know some of the, I guess, the advocacy work that you do is it Cancer Baddies? Is it?
The For the Breast of Us.
Yes.
The Baddie Ambassadors.
And because I was looking at it, and what I love about it is that smashing those stigmas of saying, this is what breast cancer can look like, and especially for people of color or women of color, being able to say, this was my experience, or you can go through this. So talk to me a little bit about how you got involved in, I guess, the message that of the work that you've been doing with them.
Sure. So For the Breast of Us is an organization that was actually recommended to me while I was going through treatment. And when they had their Baddie Ambassador program, I was just like, the first class, I was like, I'm just going to apply because they've been so helpful. Because honestly, before I started sharing my journey, just what I saw at the hospital, everyone had gray hair and No, there was nobody who was a person of color, but I knew it impacted people of color because of my family. But again, they were much older when they were diagnosed. And then you have the people who say to you, you're so young. How did this happen to you? And For the Breast of Us showed me that women under 40 are often diagnosed. And a lot of these women are women of color, and people aren't aware of that. And so I just want to do all I can to make it something we talk about, make it mainstream, if you will, that normalize it, especially amongst hospitals, because no one wants to have that experience where your doctor is looking at you like, how did you get here?
You're like, I can't explain it. You know, it happened.
You're the doctor.
But literally, like, when I went to my chemo class, the chemo nurse was like, AC is going to make all your hair fall out. I'm the youngest person in the room, the only one pregnant, and she didn't single out anybody else. And she just kept going. Every side effect, she's like, you're going to experience that. You're going to experience that. And I felt so alone in that moment. And I think sometimes medical professionals forget that we're human beings and we have emotions. And so I really just love being part of this organization to not only expose the world to the possibilities of young women being diagnosed with breast cancer, but also just helping hospitals, doctors, and nurses realize this exists and you need to treat us like human beings.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I think it's one of the things that really bothered me as well. Was like 99% of my experience was good because I had amazing nurses and I had good treatment until I needed my port taken out and I had a really awful experience where I was not treated with dignity or respect. And it made me realize that so many medical professionals or even Joe Blogs on the street doesn't understand the impact of cancer on a person. They don't understand the emotional, the mental, spiritual, physical experience of having cancer. And especially when you're younger. And I know cancer is a horrific thing for anyone. I feel, though, that when we're younger, there is an extra layer of something for us that we're dealing with. Because you're right, people, I was the youngest in the room most of the time, too. And people constantly, oh, you're way too young. Oh, my gosh, you're 30. I was 36.
I definitely agree. And I just think about, like, how people kept saying to me things like, oh, you're so healthy, and I don't understand how this happened. But the whole time I'm trying to process the rest of my, while battling cancer, here I am with two relatives that have already been diagnosed. They're telling me that I need to go get tested for the BRCA gene. They're telling me that this could be my last baby. because if I have the BRCA gene, they're going to recommend my ovaries are removed. And nobody understands. Because you're 31. You're not supposed to be dealing with cancer at 31, according to what everybody else thinks. So I just think it's so important that we have these conversations to make people really aware. Because sometimes it's like foot and mouth disease and people really don't know what to say. But other times people are truly just so ignorant and don't realize, unless it's part of their family, that this happens.
Absolutely. Oh, it's really, yeah, it's very true. I mean, no one else I really know had cancer as a young person. My mum had cancer, but she was postmenopausal and it wasn't breast. And I think people are so shocked by it, because you're right, young people aren't meant to get cancer, but we do. And you deal with so much that you shouldn't be. Yeah, the grief around parenthood, whether that's because you may not be able to have more children, or you may not be able to have children, or all the other things that can happen. And yeah, a guest I had on recently, Katie Russlett, talking about grief. And I love the way that she describes it, that grief happens when life doesn't turn out how you expect it to. And I thought, yes, because you don't expect to get cancer. And when you do, it is so life-altering. Well, I felt like it was so life-altering. It is really hard to get to the end of treatment and go, what on earth do I do now? Like, what is next? Because what I thought was next didn't happen. So how do I now trust what life has in store for me?
Absolutely. People don't talk about after treatment. It's just, okay, it's over, live your life. And by December of last year, I lost everything. My 10-year relationship ended. I basically had only 3 friends left. I had lost my job due to the pandemic and still needing cancer treatment. I had rooted me and my kids from my home and moved back in with my parents. And everybody's like, move forward. And I'm like, I don't know where to begin. So I decided for myself that moving forward meant finding what made me happy. And moving forward meant not rushing to become busy again. Forward meant honoring this time that I really believe will never happen again. This time where I get to just spend the whole day with my children. Like, eventually I need to go do some work, but I could have this time with them right now. And I want to honor that. And so it's something I started during treatment, but I really like ramped it up afterwards, was like, what is magical about today? If I don't do anything all day, if the only thing I can do is lay in bed all day, I need to find one thing magical about laying in this room all day. And it's hard when you're grieving. It's really hard to find those magic moments. I just started doing little things. Oh, I had a great glass of water. That was magical for me today. I managed to step outside and just look at the sun for 5 minutes. That was magical. So very small things, until it became like part of my life and I actually was doing magical things. And that mindset has really carried me through my healing process and has really now really shifted me from healing to being able to live again. Now I just really want to enjoy the magic of the world, because I now see it. Like, the world really is magical, but we can be so focused on our problems. So it's so easy to always see ourselves as the victim and not realize that life is really happening for us, but we have to shift our perspective. So really been focusing on just changing my mindset to see from a different view. Because like you said, nothing happened the way I wanted it to happen. Cancer blew it up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really difficult too, isn't it? Because I think where I sometimes struggle is being able to be positive or pull myself through, because I feel like, much like your experience, I've had layers of things that have not turned out as I had hoped. And sometimes it's really hard not to get really weighted down by that and figure out a way out and to really enjoy things. And the other thing is that I don't think that the way we live in the Western society, we're not encouraged or supported to live this way. We're not. Yeah. And I was thinking about this actually, because we're back in lockdown and it is stressful, even though we're at home. I guess there's that unknown. And I feel like even that first lockdown, a lot of conversation was around, oh, it taught me I needed to slow down, or it taught me to reevaluate things. But I feel like as soon as that lockdown ended, people forgot that that's something they're talking about. And it's almost like we have this amnesia between each lockdown of, we were talking about slowing down, weren't we?
Absolutely, which is why I said to you when we first started, I didn't go and do that. Everybody's like, the world opened up and let's go enjoy. And I was like, no, that's not what I want to do, because I value this new energy of just letting the day unfold. It doesn't have to be so like forced and scheduled. And part of that is really saying self-care is something that I'm going to prioritize as part of my day. Like, I want to normalize this for my children. Like, your self-care is top priority, not whatever society's telling you you need to be focused on. And literally, I schedule self-care throughout my day. And if it doesn't make me smile, I'm like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't feel like I'm missing out now. No, thank you. I don't want to pretend like it's going to make me happy to do something. And I really want to normalize that for my children, because like you said, our societies don't teach us that. When people look at me and they're like, you take baths and you enjoy it and you're teaching your children how to take baths. Yes, I want them to enjoy it. Put your Epsom salt in, put your essential oils in, and pamper yourself. Like, you deserve it. You had a long day, so you deserve to relax. It shouldn't be something that we see as, that's not normal. It should be the normal.
Wow, I have all these little realizations as you're talking. And I'm a slow learner. I constantly have to relearn these things.
The same way. When I tell you, I'm constantly in a state of rebirth, life and death cycles all the time, literally.
Yeah, because one of the things that has really changed for me, and I have to, it's a constant battle to get sucked into this mindset where, for me, exercise for years throughout my adult life was always about, you must exercise and you must exercise to this level and you must push yourself and all of those things are really intense stuff. And I could never just enjoy it for, this is a really great walk that we're on. It was, you've got to walk up this hill and you cannot stop. And if you know, it's just, this is insane. And so one of the things throughout my post-cancer life has been, my body will not let me do that stuff. And what I really love now is we have two very active dogs, and people have heard me say this so many times, but I love that my life now includes dogs, because walking dogs can be crazy making sometimes, but it's also so joyful, especially if we take them out, because where we live there are some mountain ranges behind us with beautiful forests that we can walk in. And I did this recently because they were driving me nuts, these two little shitheads. They have so much energy, and I work at home, so it does drive. It's my own fault for not taking them out for a walk earlier. But my point is that I went, right, putting you in the car and we're going out for a big walk. And I went out to these beautiful forest tracks, and it was just like, you know, they talk about forest bathing, where you go in and you just go, oh, this is amazing. And I forgot that actually is one of the joys of exercise, is just being outside and connecting in with your surroundings.
You are speaking to my soul. I will tell you, when I was pregnant with my four-year-old, I was like, oh, I gotta constantly work out. Let me, you know, I ran with him until 39 weeks pregnant.
Wow.
Can't even believe it. And then with my daughter, when I was pregnant with my daughter, before I knew I was pregnant, I would go running and I would get so sick. And it was because the tumors were in my body and I didn't know.
Wow.
And now when I try to run, it just reminds me of that moment, sick. But that's how I used to run. I used to walk, counting my steps. Like, I got to walk at a certain pace. Forget all that. That's gone now. So I do the same thing. We have a dog, and every weekend we go for a nice long hike with the dog. We take her out twice a day for like long walks. I mean, my four-year-old, I was like, I'm not getting a double stroller. You're going to learn how to ride a bicycle so we can go. And now we can go miles because you know how to pedal that bike. So it's fun. And we stop and we like do some bird watching. Or we explore we're learning about different trees. So we explore the leaves on the trees. So we take our time and enjoy the moments and really soak it up and express gratitude for this time together and to be able to experience it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's such a funny thing, isn't it? It's just this constant process of, it's almost like you're having to reprogram your brain. But some of the things I know for me are so ingrained in there that I'll catch myself out and I'll go, that just doesn't serve me anymore. Go away. I don't want that.
Yeah, and you know, I can relate to that. And when I'm asking myself now, it's like, where did you learn that this was normal? Because it's one thing to unlearn it, but if you don't address the root cause, you're going to keep repeating it over and over again. So I'm really focused on what embedded this belief in me into like these answers. So it's such a profound experience to be in. And it's like, it's a lot of hard work though to say, don't be like that anymore.
I think, though, there's something you said before, and it really sparked something in me. And I thought, this is, even if you take one message away from this episode, is that we need to forgive ourselves. When you're talking about that, when you're meditating, you're saying, and I forgive Naya. And, you know, and I think sometimes our healing starts when we can let go of any anger we have towards ourselves for whatever reason. And go, I really deserve this healing. It's time that I really loved that child in me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like when you're diagnosed with cancer, you're so mad at yourself. Like, you didn't necessarily cause it to happen, but you're mad at yourself because you really believe you caused this. You're like, where did I go wrong on this journey of life? I turned down this road to face this breast cancer. And, I cannot hold on to that anger. I honestly believe anger can be the root of a lot of illness. And so while I don't blame myself, I realized I had to release that anger for myself. And that's what forgiveness is for. It's for you. It's not for anybody else. It's literally for you to say, I let go. I surrender. I thank it for teaching me all I needed to learn. I thank it for helping me grow, right? You know, when I started chemo, I woke up with so much gratitude. In my journal, I wrote like this whole gratitude post. I am grateful, cancer, for you teaching me this, for you teaching me that. And that's like the growth. We have to get out of seeing this. It could just be a bad thing, but really it can be something to help shift us into maybe a more amazing person that we love, because that's how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
2019 and before, she should never come back. She wasn't happy, and I didn't love myself then, and now I do, and I'm happy, and I want to hold on to that.
Oh, it's so gorgeous. So if people have been inspired by listening to you, where can they find you on social media? Or I know that you do some amazing work in your city with the Mother's Healing Circle. Tell us a little bit about where we can find you.
Sure. So on social media, you can follow me at Naya's Purpose. I mainly use Instagram. And I do host a virtual healing circle with Smith Center DC. And it's a healing circle for moms with cancer. And it's every first and third Tuesday. Yes.
Hey, well, thank you so much for sharing your story with me and listeners and those amazing insights into how you started this crazy healing journey.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. And anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/thecword.
Just thinking of you. Tunes and the doggy dog finna spit. You know he's in tune with the season. Come here, baby, tell me why you leaving. Tell me if it's weed that you need. If you wanna breathe, I got the best weed by the seas. Ain't nobody tripping, VIP they can't get in. If something go wrong, then you know we get you gripping. With a G from Los Angeles, where the helicopters got cameras, just to get a glimpse of our chucks and our khakis and our bouncer car. You with your friend, right?
Yeah.
She ain't trying to bring over no men, right?
No.
She ain't gotta be in the distance. She can get high all in an instant. Have you ever flown on G5 from London to Ibiza? You gotta have cake too. You'll have Sundays with your key times. You'll see Venus and Serena in the Wimbledon arena. And I
Uncle Charlie,
you're
free.
You get dumb, you got me foolish. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you lost until she's gone. She had a pretty face. Drove you wild. But you ain't had that Snoop Doggy Dogg style.
I'm not sure on what I see. You bet don't fuck with me. Are you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes. I'm missing no other guys. Are you telling me this is a sign?
Oh. Don't think about it, boy. Leave her alone. Nigga, you ain't no change.
Mi jarabe te levanta de la tumba, es un jaleo pa' que siempre estés adelante, un poquito de mela, sazón y rumba, es un pasito que te voy a enseñar, un menesto que sé que te gustará, y cuando aprendas a bailarlo con sabor, te aseguro que este ritmo gozarás.
Se goza más, se baila así.
Y el ritmo de candela.